Quarter century ago, Michael Keane had set off to find and photograph children living in the violence-prone area of Belfast, Northern Ireland. And he has since visited many parts of the world, including some parts that I've had a chance to visit, too, Pakistan, Nicaragua, El Salvador. And he has photographed children in all of these places. He's from Madison, a photographer whose original photos will be the subject of an exhibit titled Small Arms. It'll be at the Chazen Museum of Art at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, the UW-Madison campus. And the photos depict children in violence-plagued areas of the world, including Northern Ireland, Afghanistan, Beirut, Nicaragua, Guatemala, and elsewhere. The show opens this coming Saturday, as a matter of fact, September 8th, and it runs through October 28th. And accompanying that, he has a book called Small Arms, Children of Conflict, of his photographs. And I haven't had a chance to go to the Chazen Museum of Art because the exhibit hasn't opened yet, but I certainly plan to get over there myself, especially after looking through his book and reading the pieces that accompany the photographs that he has taken. I certainly welcome your calls and questions as we move along today, and you can join us at 1-800-642-1234 or in the Madison area at 263-1890, 263-1890. Give us a call with your questions and comments. Michael Keenan's with me in the studio. Mike, hi. Thank you for taking time to be with us today. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Larry. It's a pleasure to be here.
How did you get started doing this?
As a student, I went to the university here, and it was during the Vietnam War. And each day I'd go to class, and more often than not, there'd be a protest, and I'd look at the protest, and I'd read about it the next day in the newspaper. I couldn't quite recognize what I had personally witnessed, so I decided, well, I'm going to bring a camera along and document what actually did occur versus what's reported in the local and national press.
And so that's how you got started as a photographer.
I was very fortunate, yes. The first year I was lucky enough to have pictures in Time, Newsweek, and Esquire magazines, and I thought, oh, what a simple way to earn a living. Of course, I come to recognize that's not the case.
It's a very, it can be a very difficult job indeed. And as I was reading a little about your personal history, you then went off and took photos of a different sort with some sometimes famous people. And
yeah, I thought, oh, I'm going to make it big in New York City. And so I go to New York, and well, the first day I went to the French embassy and took a picture which appeared on the page one of the New York Post. And then I got a job with Andy Warhol and shot fashion and parties for him. But the photography just didn't seem particularly meaningful to me, so eventually I came back to Madison, and from there, hearing about a revolution in Nicaragua and studying political philosophy at the university, I decided to go down and document on my own the revolution which was going on in Nicaragua in, I believe, 1979.
I happened to be there myself shortly after the Sandinistas overthrew Somoza government, and it was one of the things that that struck me was to see so many children. It was very disconcerting, to say the least, to see young kids running around with big guns that were almost as big as them.
It was really troubling to me as well, in the sense that because of the Contras coming across the border in the war, the adults were being sent to guard the borders. But in the towns and villages, you'd see very young children carrying AK-47s and patrolling the streets. There was conscription that the Sandinistas implemented. And I didn't know whether to be sad about the fact that we were mining their harbors and trying to destroy their economy because we viewed them as a threat, or that in turn the Sandinista government had to conscript children to fight.
To fight, yeah. And so you have since, this has led you pretty much around the world.
Yeah, I've been fortunate enough to go virtually everywhere I wanted to and document, for lack of a better term, civil disorder. But more importantly, when I wasn't doing these things, particular things for magazines or newspapers. I was out on my own documenting who suffers the most, which would be the elderly and the children, the non-combatants. And more in warfare, we're seeing that they are the ones who suffer the most. And I find this tragic. And that's why the book, as well as this exhibition, is trying to bring to light kind of the overall, a much broader picture of what war entails and how long-lasting it can be. And having been in Belfast for a month this last summer and documenting the lives of the children who lived through that just really brought home to me the seriousness and the implications of war and conflict.
And as I looked at the photos that you have included in your book, which are those same photos, if I'm not mistaken, will be present at the Chazen Museum.
Yes, they'll be the same.
Be the same photos. I was struck, and then in reading, I looked at the. To be perfectly honest, I looked at the pictures first, and then read the foreword afterwards. But I thought, well, I guess I was thinking along the right lines here. Your photos are not action pictures per se. They're, and I think you say in the book something about, but they see between. Often things that happened after the violence had happened.
Once the soldiers or the armor had left the town, village, or city, I documented kind of what was left, the children, and how they cope. Some are working, some are playing, some, as we've already said, are in the military. But they all have various mechanisms for coping, and that's kind of what I documented. It wasn't about what we used to call the bang-bang, which was the actual fighting. It was about what happens when those things subside.
When those things end, yeah. Michael Kienitz, our guest today, as we talk with him about children living amid violence. He's a photographer whose original photos will be the subject of Small Arms, an exhibit at the Chazen Museum of Art at the University of Wisconsin-Madison campus starting this Saturday and running through October 28th. If you'd like to join in with your own comments or questions, feel free at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. Give us a call with your questions and comments. I noticed a lot of your pictures, or photos, I should say, are the subject or subjects sometimes are looking right straight at you, right at the lens.
Yeah, most of the time it's because they're kind of surprised that there's somebody out there documenting what it is they're doing. And it isn't, I in no way ever posed any of these photographs, but I want that eye contact because I believe there's an important relationship between the photographer, the subject, and then the viewer. When they're making eye contact with me, they're also making eye contact with the viewer when they look at the photography. And I think there's a dynamic there that is very powerful.
And I was certain that you'd never posed any of them. Do you talk to those? You do talk to those folks, too.
My Spanish was pretty good. It got a little rough when I was in Pakistan and Afghanistan, although I was fortunate enough in Afghanistan to meet someone who actually taught English who was also in the Mujahideen. And of course, one of the reasons I enjoyed Ireland so much is there was no language barrier, and that's why I decided to go back there first and looking for the children from some 25 years ago.
Yeah. Dr. Gault in Ellison Bay is online, so let's go to Dr. Gault. Hi, thank you for calling.
Yes.
Yes, go ahead.
Yes, I just wanted to make a comment that Larry Mueller has the best pronunciation I have ever heard on the air. From any announcer, and it's a pleasure to listen to him.
Well, I appreciate the comment. I sometimes am chastised if I do mispronounce something, but for the most part, we try our best. And I have to tell you that when I was in Pakistan myself, in Islamabad, and then over to Peshawar.
It's a pretty amazing place, isn't it?
A pretty amazing place, and probably the most hair-raising and harrowing car ride that I've ever had in my life.
Yeah, I too had one of those on I believe it's the highest road in the world.
It was
in the Hindu Kush Mountains.
It was an absolute frightening experience. But just in terms of the language, one of the things that was a bit humbling to me was to be able to talk to so many very, very poor people who spoke Urdu, but they also spoke English, and I was not able to reciprocate. It was an amazing experience for me, that's for sure. Well, how did this exhibit come about?
A long story. Basically, my neighbor, Marianne Fitzgerald, once asked me over for the proverbial neighborhood slideshow. Years later, she became in charge of exhibitions at the university, Chazen Museum, and she got me in the door, and I talked to Russell, and we laid out I think it must have been at least 100 photos. And Russell said to me, Russell Panchenko, the director of the Chazen, mm-hmm. Russell said to me, you know, I really like what's going on with the children. Let's go with that. And so about a year and almost a year and a half ago, I started this planning for this exhibition.
And was the book part of the result of the exhibition, or vice versa, or you had the book in mind? Or
yeah, I wanted to do a catalog of the exhibition, and along the way, to get all the information and dates correct, I started looking back at a Sunday magazine piece I did on Ireland years ago, 1981, and under one of the photographs, it said, "What is the future of this child?" And I thought to myself, you know, that's a great question. I'm going to find him. So Evan Short of one of the newspapers in Belfast ran several of the photographs, and he came in the next day, and his desk was littered with people who recognized the people that were in the shots, and I was able to account for or meet virtually everyone I had photographed 25 years ago.
Oh, there's some amazing stories connected with that. And we'll hear some of those stories and talk with Michael Kienitz some more here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Glad to have you along here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. Before we get back to talking with Michael Kienitz, I want to just remind you, if you're going to be in the Manitouish Waters area, this Thursday, day after tomorrow, September 6th, I will be broadcasting from the Manitouish Waters Community Center Pavilion from 11 to 12:30, and we'll be talking. It coincides with the annual World Muskie Championship Classic, and the program will focus on fishing and on lake ecology and the status of the lakes in northern Wisconsin. I've got several great guests. And it's free, and you can just come on over to the Manitouish Waters Community Center. Get over there a little early, 10:30 or so, or 10 o'clock even. I think we open at 10, and I'll be there, and we'll be happy to talk with you, and you can watch a show. Now, though, we're talking with Michael Kienitz of Madison, photographer whose original photos are the subject of an exhibit at the Chazen Museum of Art at the UW-Madison. It's called Small Arms. He also has a book that he's published, or that we have published, about the exhibit itself, with all of the photos from the exhibit in the book. And really pleased to have him with us today. He's photoed children in violence-plagued areas of the world, right around the world: Northern Ireland, Beirut, Nicaragua, Pakistan, Afghanistan, Guatemala, among others. And so we're really pleased to have him on to talk about his experiences with the photography, with the children. And he's gone back and has talked to people that he took photos of 25 years earlier, and has, amazingly enough, been able to find those people. And it's really, I'm anxious and eager to hear what he has to say about those experiences as well. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Or in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. Give us a call with your questions and comments. And Mike, Someone wondered, Betty from Wausau wondered, did you document your experiences, simply document your experiences, or did you try to help out with the terrible situations you've seen over time?
A little of both. And part of what this book project is about is that the artistic royalties from the sales will go to organizations that help children in these countries to endure the plight. Whenever I was in these countries, for example, in Guatemala, I would try and buy the children shoes, or I'd try and directly help them in some way. So I don't think I was too much of the sort who would just go in there and kind of document it and pull out without being overly concerned. I think this might also be evidenced by the fact that 25 years later, I returned to Northern Ireland and the children were just, well, now adults, were just absolutely stunned that I was still concerned with their well-being. Simply because, well, in a number of instances, even their parents could care less about them, and that was part of the problem during the conflict. The parents were so drawn into that, putting machine guns in the baby carriages and wrapping pistols in beach towels and sending them on buses to circulate guns around Belfast. And I mean, the stories are just incredible about what these children have endured.
And as I looked at some of the pictures from Belfast, I felt kind of, well, it would be hard not to feel sad about the children. I remember the picture of the little boy standing outside of a pub waiting for his dad to come out, for example.
Larry, that particular picture, when you hear the story of what happened in that boy's life is particularly poignant. When he was about 16 or 17, which when I had photographed him, he was about 9, paramilitaries, believing that he had participated in a certain act, shot him in his wrists, in his knees, and in his ankles. This resulted in him having to have a finger in each hand amputated. So that picture is so poignant, and it's kind of like poetic foreshadowing for what was going to transpire in his life growing up in that troubled area.
Yeah. Lewis in Fitchburg, your turn. Thank you very much for calling.
Yes. I wanted to make a comment, and I know I want to take away from this wonderful worldwide coverage of what's going on, but I would appreciate your guest making a connection to what's happening in this country. I lived in Los Angeles for over 25 years, and it's a long story, but I had befriended a man from Belize, and we became fairly close over 25 years, and I knew his family real well. And anyway, I knew his children, and one of them was shot in the head when he was 13. In South Central LA, and I had never been to his house or anything, and I was determined to go to that funeral and somehow be part of this other part of America that my group certainly know nothing about. And I went, and I saw the bullet hole in his head that they had tried to camouflage, and I knew this little boy when he was 4 and 5, when he'd come with his father up to my house to help me do odd jobs and things. And in the middle of the funeral, the gang members who did it marched down the aisle, and maybe 7 or 8 of them, and walked up to the coffin and said some horribly disparaging remarks and just walked out. And I think that's the only moment in my life where my blood froze. And afterwards, Rupert, the man I knew real well, gave me a shovel at the burial, and I don't know if it was an African American custom or Belize, but they insisted on burying the body of their loved ones themselves all together, and everyone had a hand with that shovel, and we buried him until the top of the grave was full of dirt, which was the most cathartic thing I think I've ever been through. And and again, I don't want to take away what's going on, what's happening in the rest of the world, but I think your guest would be in a perfect position to make a connection here, that there's this thing is going on here, and we are so sanitized and protected from it. And,
well, this book doesn't sanitize and protect us, and you'll be happy to hear that I have a picture from a flea market in Mississippi of Ku Klux Klan selling paraphernalia to a young child, and I have a young white-powered Nazi at a rally in Milwaukee. I've included America in this.
Oh, thank you, because I it's so easy to read in the morning paper and just flip a page, oh, that's the world section, you know, and I just think it's so important that this is happening.
Well,
right
see,
here.
I don't see. I see a definite connection between all of this, and I mean, we can draw parallels to the collapse of the bridge of I-35, the fact that the law enforcement officers no longer have enough ammunition in this country because it's all going to Iraq. I mean, there's so many parallels. This war, the present war, and previous wars are. The implications are much deeper than we care to think about, I think.
Yeah.
Right. Well, I'm very pleased to hear that.
Thank you very much for calling.
You're welcome.
Yeah, appreciate that call. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890, 263-1890. Give us a call with your questions and comments. Certainly the trip that you made, we were just talking about the one child. What were some of the other experiences you had in finding people?
Paul McNally. I had first met him in a cemetery where they were commemorating those who had died, who had connections to the Irish Republican Army and were nationalists and believed that Britain should no longer be controlling a portion of Ireland. When he was 16, he was a barber's apprentice slash receptionist, and a Protestant came in and fired 5 shots into the desk he was sitting. He ducked down, and then the Protestant proceeded to murder the barber who he was working for. And that same week, that was a Tuesday or Wednesday, that was Protestant violence. So that same week, he was at a pub and had mentioned to somebody who was in the IRA, what can you do about protecting us? And they took him out and savagely beat him regarding that question. So he told me at that point he just would no longer have anything to do with politics because here both sides basically were just incredibly brutal.
And I think in the books at some point you make the point that or maybe it's somewhere else, I can't remember exactly where I've saw that It photographing all this has had to have an impact on you politically, although I believe you've said yourself that Democrats and Republicans alike have...
Yeah, I mean, really what we're talking about here is not a Democratic, a Republican, or a radical political issue. It's our own concern for humanity, whether it be, as the listener alluded to earlier, in America or anywhere else in the world. But until we move beyond, you know, this foolish kind of regimented Republican, he's a Democrat, we're just not going to really move on and change the way the world is. And that's why I think we keep repeating over and over these same mistakes. Our president wants us to be patient about the war in Iraq. Well, why weren't they equally as patient before we went in there?
Yeah, let's go back and talk a little bit more about the photographs that you have in your book. And that will be at the exhibit. Describe the photos at the exhibit first. Now, these will be much larger photos than what you have in the book.
Yeah, the photographs at the Chazen will be approximately 16 by whatever the smaller dimension was. There'll be 36 black and white prints. But on the outside, speaking of size of photographs, Bill and Mary Chandler of Great Big Pictures in Madison have done a 30-foot blow-up of some of the children in Belfast, which hangs on the outside of the museum, as well as they've also done an 8-foot blow-up, which will be hanging in the museum. We basically kind of ran out of space relative to the size and scope of what Great Big Pictures can produce. And we're talking about 8 countries on 6 continents, including, as I've alluded to earlier, a couple from the United States. I thought it was important to include our own country because we certainly shouldn't be getting off scot-free with the violence that occurs in our own country. But many of these other conflicts do have connections with the United States in one way or another due to, you know, policy of our government, whether it be Democratic or Republican over the years.
And the photos themselves show, certainly don't idealize the children.
What I've tried to do is show the various manners in which they cope. So I hope your listeners aren't coming away with the idea of, oh, it's 36 war photographs. It's not. Children on a pushcart hauling wood, a 6-year-old hauling up a giant load of wood on her back up a steep mountain pass in Guatemala. 2 identical twins holding pigeons, which they wanted to release, symbolic of the doves, but they had no doves, so they have pigeons. There are some where the children have machine guns, but there's others where they're just enjoying themselves. Probably one of, to me, the most poignant is a little boy at the top of a mountain in Guatemala just flying his kite, and you can see Lake Atitlan and the mountains in the background, and he, amongst all of the conflict, he managed to find this peaceful scene at the top of a mountain and fly his kite. So it's basically the children in various ways coping with the conflict that's around them.
And the photos are, I believe, all outdoor photos. There are at least in... trying to remember if they're in public places, at least. You don't have any at a person's home or anything of that nature.
Yeah, they're all pretty much public scenes. And with relatively few exceptions, there's no adults around. One of the people I worked with on this project just for input was Neil Jarman, the Institute of Conflict Research in Belfast. And he really laid out, when I asked him to look at the photographs and tell me, he says, well, look at, you're seeing in these photographs the total breakdown of institutions. You're seeing children more or less alone without adult supervision. But in the end, sometimes some of those things are really not so bad. I mean, the children, above and beyond what they were directly dealing with, learn to become resourceful, learn to become creative. There is some inspiration, I think, at looking at these photographs.
I would agree with that. Has photography of this nature changed over the years much? Is there?
Well, photography in general to me has changed in the sense that now with the aid of a digital camera, everybody's out recording images, and it seems to me that the images... we're recording a lot of them. People are taking a lot of pictures, but they're not really making a lot of pictures. They don't really put much thought into much else other than just pushing the button and seeing what's at the back of the camera in this digital world. So it has changed in a sense, I think. And the whole news business has also changed. At the time I started doing photography, there appeared on the scene some people with little hairdryer cameras that said CNN on the side of them, and we know the rest of the history behind that. Now with 24-hour news, the news magazine business has virtually vanished. Time and Newsweek are cutting back. The ad revenues are way down. It's no longer a particularly powerful medium.
And yet... I can think of a couple of days ago when we gave our 4-year-old a digital camera for a birthday present, and with the digital photography, everybody's out there taking, a lot of people are out there taking pictures.
Well, it is really marvelous that it has introduced a lot more people to photography, and funny you should mention, because I will be having at the opening an 8-year-old actually documenting the event for me, who I've taught photography and video since he was 2 years old. He's an absolutely brilliant child by the name of Colin Supple. I met his father on a bike racing team, the Brazen Dropouts that I was on, and it's just really fun to watch him with his camera. So you're right, it really has helped to introduce a lot of people in a very easy way, and younger children, how to do photography.
I'm wondering, what do you want people to take away from your exhibit and from your book?
What I'd really like them to do is examine the way they live their lives and how it affects others around the world. And in some way, perhaps, if they're at all moved by this photography, to figure out a way that they can improve the world, the standing of people who are less fortunate than themselves. If the person was an accountant, for example, donating some time to a nonprofit to do their accounting or what have you, whatever discipline that we've learned, to share that with somebody else to better their lives.
Our guest today, Michael Keenan. Still have time for a question or two for him. If you'd like to join in at 1-800-642-1234 or in the Madison area at 263-1890, 263-1890. Give us a call with your questions and with your comments. Would you share another story or two from your experiences with the children? I find those fascinating, particularly going back and actually seeing some of them 25 years later.
Well, one of the women who I photographed, well, at that time she would have been a 9-year-old girl or 8-year-old girl. She was on the cover of the Sunday magazine piece. By the way, the Milwaukee Journal next Sunday, Sarah Carr, who specializes in reporting on children, is going to do a very in-depth report on this project, and also she contacted the children as well. But anyway, this girl was 9 or 8 years old. At 9, she was raped. Her mother died from alcoholism. She was Catholic. She was put in a Protestant orphanage. She, at 15, met a boy whose father just happened to be head of one of the largest Protestant paramilitaries, and she became pregnant and had the boy's child. The grandfather would have been David Irvine. He recently died, and he was such a cataclysmic leader over there that even Jerry Adams from the nationalist Catholic persuasion attended his funeral. But now, since that child, which was only 14 at the time, he hung himself. So the woman has already, you know, and she went up to his bedroom and found him there, and it was just tragic.
Have many of the children, well, many of them are resilient.
They are resilient, and there are some success stories, although one I think is a little bit entertaining in that he, again, also was on the cover of the original Milwaukee Journal Sunday Magazine article in 1981. He was holding a little plastic machine gun. We went to try and find him, and the two girls that were on the cover as well, we went to one of their aunts, and it turned out that next door was the aunt of the boy we were looking for. Now, what were the chances of that? And she had bought him the little plastic machine gun. And he turns out to be a millionaire with radio stations in Spain. So I contacted his mother. I said, what do you attribute the success of this boy pulling through these troubles and becoming so successful? And she said, well, for one thing, we moved to London a year after you took the pictures. He didn't have to live through the troubles.
Oh, Michael, thank you so much for being with us today. Really looking forward to your exhibit. And I'm certain there are going to be a lot of people there to see it. And I hope, is the book, by the way, available outside of the Chazen Museum? Or
It will be, I believe, at Borders and a few other book outlets. And then people can also contact my website, and we'll be distributing it over that as well.
And what's your website?
It'd be www.michaelkienitz, KIENITZ.com.
MichaelKienitz.com. And Kienitz again is KIENITZ, MichaelKienitz.com. Michael Kienitz of Madison is a photographer whose original photos are the subject of the Chazen Museum of Art at the UW-Madison campus exhibit. It's entitled Small Arms, and the photos, again, as we've been talking about, depict children in violence-plagued areas of the world. Fascinating photographs. Fascinating guy. Thanks so much, Michael, for being with us.
Thank you, Larry.
Appreciate
it. It's a pleasure.
It. appreciate it very much. And thank you for listening. Just to take a look at what's ahead tomorrow at 11, we'll be talking with Scott Craven, professor of wildlife ecology at the UW-Madison. And as always, we'll be talking about the wonderful world of wildlife with him. And then don't forget, on Thursday, the day after, I will be in Manitowish Waters at the Community Center from 11 to 12:30. We'll be broadcasting live, talking about fishing and lake ecology with a variety of guests. And so we're looking forward to that as well. Thank you all for listening, and of course, please stay with us. Lots more in store here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.